Time is 8:35. I'm Harold Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. Joining me in a studio, Danny Masfeld from D-Analysis. And there we go. I got it right this morning when I was promoting the sector. I just couldn't get the name right, and I have no idea why. So you are now, you're a doctor. You're a PhD of molecular biology.
Yes.
When we talk about microbiology and molecular, is that the same thing?
A little bit different, a little bit different. I mean, splitting hairs, microbiology is more to do with, I guess, fungi, bacteria, microbiome.
Right.
Whereas molecular biology, you know, my background is kind of medical research. So my PhD was in malaria.
Right.
You know, you're looking at cell biology, cancer biology, that sort of thing is more on the molecular side.
Right. Okay, and there's been this massive growth, and I don't know why perhaps it's reached my consciousness only over the last couple of months, but wherever I look, I'm looking at DNA testing, I'm looking at genetics, I'm looking at people starting to look at the makeup of their DNA in order to help them not only with politics in America and to determine what percentage Native American you are, but also is on a more serious note in terms of performance in sport, diet, predisposition to illnesses. All of these types of things are now more or less available to us. Is that right?
There's been a massive explosion in in the awareness of these types of tests over the last probably 3 to 4 years. I read a statistic that in 2017, more genetic tests were done than in all the previous years combined. So,
so that shows the exponential growth.
Explosion in the awareness of the consumer, as well as the willingness of the consumer to undergo the genetic testing, and also the willingness of doctors to embrace the test and work with the test in practice. So that's what we've seen, especially in South Africa, is the awareness and the desire of healthcare practitioners to start bringing these tests into practice, making it an integral part of the way they manage their patients' health.
Well, that's an interesting point, because very often you see things happening alongside, parallel to the medical, the traditional, conventional medical community, and there seems to, and there can be a resistance to engaging in this. But during the song, David Abramson, who is a psychologist, we were just chatting about this, and David, I've asked you to stay because I thought it was such an interesting point that you were making about psychiatrists starting to use this. So just give me the background here.
Absolutely. I think for years, as long as I've been practicing, you know, we've seen that when people are referred to psychiatrists for medication, and maybe it's a bit critical and unfair to say it's an educated guess what psychiatric medication to put someone on. But, you know, we do see in a very practical sense that there can be three of us in the room and we're all depressed. Mm-hmm. And, we each go on to 20 milligrams of levofloxacin, and, then you feel much better. I get side effects, and Howard feels nothing.
Right.
And to try and understand why that is, we don't know in the past. And so then it's been a question of, you know, do we up the medication? Do we take them off? Do we try something else? And it does seem to be, although there is a certain amount of medications you can try, there are a couple of antidepressants, antipsychotics. You know, the bottom line is that in the end, it seems to be from what I have experienced, at times, if you are not as lucky to get it to hit it the first time and get the right medication, a bit of trial and error, and it takes a lengthy period of time to actually get the full benefit.
And a very difficult period of time.
To get the full benefit from the medication.
Right.
And that's the problem, is that six, you know, the doctors will say to you, let's try this, and then come back in 6 weeks and see how you're doing.
Right. So shortcutting that, a DNA analysis actually allows you an insight into what medication will work.
Well, maybe can I ask, Dan, if that's the case, if someone is on, is depressed or is anxious and they've been advised to go on to medication, would it be useful to come to your company, and how would they benefit from having a DNA swab?
So we're talking about our test, which is called MedCheck, and it's a DNA swab that we're looking at the drug metabolizing enzymes, so specifically the genes that encode the drug metabolizing enzymes, which are responsible for metabolizing the drugs that you ingest. And because we metabolize these drugs at different speeds, we end up with different therapeutic levels of the breakdown product circulating in the blood. So if we take, for example, it's away from the psychiatry space, but we take a common drug like codeine, which so many people take. Codeine by itself is not an active ingredient. It gets broken down in the body to morphine.
Right.
And if you are what we call an ultra-rapid metabolizer, you can end up with much, much higher levels of morphine in the body than
you would ideally want.
And in fact, there have been cases where people have died from taking codeine at a regular dose. There's been a case where a breastfeeding baby has died because the mom was taking codeine.
Wow.
And so, you know, understanding the genetics, understanding the speed at which you're breaking down these drugs will tell you, A, is the drug suitable for you? Are you likely to experience a side effect? Or is it going to be simply ineffective? And a lot of people are taking medication that is simply ineffective.
So when you do this, this is one of the tests that you do?
It's one of the tests that we do, and the report will go to the doctor, and it very clearly categorizes over 150 different drugs into standard precautions, use with caution, or consider alternatives.
Amazing. So just give us an overview of the different tests that you could do.
The test that we're talking about, the pharmacogenomics, is MedCheck. It fits into this. It's another long word to have to learn. Pharmacogenomics, which is pharmacology and genetics. And that's the only test that we look at in that space. It covers pain, cardiovascular, and psychiatric meds.
Right.
And then we've got the other side of the coin, which is nutrigenomics. Now we're looking at the link between nutrition and genetics.
Okay.
And exactly the same principles of individual responsiveness that we've spoken about with medication apply with the diet that we eat, the types of exercise we do, our ability to lose weight, our risks for chronic disease, all of these things. There's a wealth of information that can be gained from seeing what is going on at a genetic level. And all of the genes that we look at, it's empowering information because we're not giving you information that is scary or that you can't act on.
Right.
But it's empowering because we're giving you the tools to make changes.
Right. So in other words, say you would do a test and you'd say to a person, listen, you are eating a high protein diet, eating very little carbs. Actually, it's not the most appropriate diet for you.
Correct. You know, and the problem with dieting, of course, it becomes very fad very quickly. So, you know, half of Johannesburg was banting last year or the year before, and you'll find that some people had fantastic results to banting, and other people probably not.
Right.
And the ones that didn't, it's because, you know, genetically it's just not the right diet type for them.
Right.
So what we do, we work primarily with dietitians on the DNA diet who will look at the genetic results, incorporate that into everything else they know about their patient, their lifestyle, their food preferences, intolerances, allergies, or whatever else. And craft a diet that is most suitable for them as an individual.
So instead of saying a one size fits all, it's very much modified to hopefully achieve the best possible result from you.
Exactly.
Time is 8:44. I'm chatting to Danny Meyersfeld. He is from a company called DNAlysis, which does DNA analysis, exactly what it sounds like. What I didn't realize and what I'm learning this morning is that there are different types of tests that you could do for various, in order to understand various aspects. Anything you want to know or want to comment on a DNA testing, 34519 or 061-895-1019. Danny, what is the most common test that people come in to do? Would it be sport? Would it be pharmacology? Would it be exercise? And I want to spend a moment talking about exercise, but I'm just curious to hear which is the most common that people would come to you for.
I think probably the first test, which we launched with the DNA diet and the DNA health.
Right.
And those are probably still the most popular. So people are going to do two general tests that are going to give them, you know, pretty general information about their health, maybe what if they need nutritional supplements, which ones do they actually need, as opposed to just taking, you know, the brightest colored shelf off the bottle at discount.
Right.
Sorry, Stan. So those are probably the most commonly done.
Right.
And then you've got the guys who've got the specific goals who maybe there's a family history of cancer. They look interested in the DNA estrogen test, want to improve their training, enhance their training somehow, and then they'll look at the DNA sport.
Right. So And with that, you take that information, and then you have obviously have to go to somebody who understands it.
Correct.
How slow has the uptake been from the medical fraternity? We've already spoken about psychiatrists. They clearly, for them, there's a very, very, I suppose for all doctors there is, but the psychiatrists that are battling, as David says, with getting balances right and trying to deal with patients that are in real distress, it would make sense, and they are your first. They've been the first uptakers of this. Is that right?
Yeah. On the pharmacogenomics, the right. psychiatrist yes. is definitely where the uptake has been right. the quickest. We're starting to see more cardiologists, physicians, GPs starting to work with the test. And we're also starting to see, which is what we expected to happen, is the demand coming from the end user. So somebody will go to their doctor saying, I want to do this test. I'm taking these medications and I want to know, right. are these the right medications for me? So with that test, it's the only test that you can purchase online. So you can buy the test off our MedCheck website.
Right.
And then you nominate a healthcare practitioner to receive the report. So we still won't send the report to you directly.
Right.
We'll send it to a doctor of your choice.
Right, right. And at this stage, the medical aids aren't covering this.
Medical aids aren't covering it
right.
as of yet.
Right. David?
Dan, do you see children coming in for this?
Sure. Yeah, we've been given talks at Bella Vista. There's so many kids who are taking meds, ADHD medications, right, and all right, sorts of
especially
things.
Especially at a school like Bella Vista.
Yeah. And absolutely, parents want to know that maybe the full dose is not required. Often somebody can get by on a lower dose. So we definitely do the med check, especially I think is absolutely suitable for kids as well. Things like codeine, which across the States and Europe, codeine is banned for kids under the age of 12. In South Africa, it's still more widely accessible. It's one of those important drugs to test for as well.
It's so interesting. I've never really thought of it, but now that you're mentioning this, you often have these conversations when you're in a group of people and there are a few of you that might suffer from headaches, for example, and somebody will say, whew, I'll take two Panado and I'm out. Mm. And I'll say, well, that's for me, it's like taking two Smarties. And you just wonder what that is. It doesn't really make any sense. But now that you're actually explaining it, exactly. it really does.
That is exactly it. And you spoke earlier about the different cohorts that you'll get. The guys who respond, the guys who have side effects, the guys where nothing will happen. You get these different cohorts every time somebody takes medication. And the same principle applies for people who've tried a diet.
Exactly.
You'll be in that same conversation that you've tried a diet or you've tried a training program.
Right.
And the one guy saying this is the best thing ever, and the other person saying, it did nothing for me.
Yeah.
And a large part of, especially with weight loss and hint, hint, a large part of this is around compliance.
Did he just call me fat on air?
You did, told me.
No, let's throw him out. Don't even switch off the mic.
It's just lucky I'm not sensitive.
Can we put this into context? You've come to me.
You really don't need to do that. I promise you. Yes, yes.
Howard, he's just reaffirming your family traditions that at 10 o'clock, tea and cake is allowed.
Yes, that is true.
Are we going to be fighting these family traditions?
I think we might be.
Believe me, you're going to find a lot more than just my family traditions if you take me on this journey. But it definitely sounds, and I don't know that it's an excuse, but there are times that, that you go on a diet. Certainly I've dieted my entire life and I go on a diet and I'm on a diet for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I see no difference. It gets frustrating and really you are and shooting in the dark. So then I'll try another diet and someone's tried that one and then I'll try that one. And it really is a throwing something against a wall and hope it sticks.
And a big part of the dietitians working with the DNA test up front is it allows them to manage the expectations of the patient because they're able to sit down with that patient and look at their genetics and say, look, we've actually got some barriers to overcome. It is going to take you longer than it took your friend who happened to be on the same diet or similar diet, but you need to persevere. And having that expectation managed up front,
that's huge, from a goal perspective, I'm sure,
would make a massive difference to your compliance. And ultimately what I was saying was it's about compliance. Mm. It's about sticking with that diet and not losing, not becoming disheartened.
Especially because so if you are told that, for a while you're not going to lose weight because that's, or you might not because of your particular makeup or DNA structure, whatever that would be, it makes a huge difference because then my expectations aren't set.
Absolutely. And from a psychological and emotional perspective, if you think about it, if we have predictability, if someone says to you, you know, it's only going to start working in 2 weeks' time, then you are, you're very clear about those boundaries, about when you can start expecting it. And if you don't have that, then you can get disheartened, you can lose motivation, as exactly. we were talking about.
And then you go onto the internet and look for another diet and jump onto the next thing.
No, first we eat magnums for breakfast. Yeah, wow. For a while.
Megas. These jabs. These jabs.
Are you gonna, I wanna know this, Sinatra. Are you gonna feel too guilty now to go to that fridge after the show and eat your magnum?
No. I'm starting my New Year's resolutions next month.
In February. It's actually probably not a bad idea. Who can worry about everything else and New Year's resolutions in February?
Yeah.
In January. makes perfect sense.